You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Indicated there is a lot of effort. There's absolutely a lot of effort, coming from Virginia in recent years, anglers targeting cobia, sight fishing, all of that. So I think that sort of in combination with cobia expanding their range, so, you know, moving further north and also maybe spending more time in mid-Atlantic waters than they have in the past.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Guidepost. Will Poston here from ASGA, and today we will be talking about a cobia management action that is currently in public in the public comment phase. And we are joined today by the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission's Emily Franca, who many of you may know from the striped bass world. But in addition to striped bass, she also devotes a good portion of her time to helping to manage Atlantic cobia. Emily, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Excited to talk about cobia.
Awesome. Yes, this is cobia are definitely one of those species for many of our members, particularly in the mid-Atlantic and the Bay States and down south, that, you know, they're not around all the time, but when they are, they definitely provide a great sight casting challenge from some towers. Guys throwing jigs at them, some people throw flies at them, and they are one of those super cool fish. Taste really good, and do present a ton of opportunity. So definitely one of these species that while may not be as front of mind as like striped bass, redfish, etc., We at ASGA are paying attention to them. So, Emily, I think before we get into draft addendum 2, I think it would be beneficial to our listeners to kind of go through some quick background on, how we got here and just some history about cobia management, because they are one of those species, right, that was previously federally managed and then, shifted to the commission after we learn more about the species, more or less.
Yeah, absolutely. So cobia is one of the newer species at the commission. So the commission developed the first interstate fishery management plan for cobia back in 2017. That plan was approved. And at that point, it was sort of a joint effort, or we call complementary management, between the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council and the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. So just a few years before this happened, the federal quota for cobia was exceeded, and sort of part of the motivation of joining forces with the commission was to more closely monitor state landings and to help sort of mitigate the impact of closures in federal waters sort of for the states. So that's sort of some of the history. And one thing that I think is really important to note is that we are only talking about cobia that occur from the Florida-Georgia line northward. So, of course, there are a lot of cobia and a lot of, a big cobia fishery in Florida. But the Florida cobia are managed as part of the Gulf of Mexico stock, which is managed separately. At the commission, we only manage cobia from the Florida-Georgia line northward.
So, it's funny you brought that up. I had that jotted down to also bring up, because yesterday I was having some conversations with some Florida guides.
Yeah.
Just, to see what they're seeing, et cetera. But, I knew that the commission didn't really touch Florida's cobia from a management perspective. Was that all informed by, tagging and movement studies, or?
Exactly. So as part of stock, as part of the last stock assessment, there was what they call a stock ID workshop, where they look really in depth at this question of sort of, where is the stock boundary? And there's a lot of information that goes into that. So yes, the management boundary is that Florida-Georgia line.
Gotcha. So you know, kind of diving into cobia management again, more broadly, I also think it's important for listeners to understand that cobia might be the most perfectly designed fish to frustrate our data collection programs and, you know, just how the fishery is distributed, also challenge, you know, the stock assessment process. Like, so I'm wondering if you want to, you know, give a little context to those challenges. And then, you know, that'll probably tease us into the need for addendum two as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing I forgot to mention is, you know, we started out with sort of this joint management effort with the council. And then just a few years ago in 2019, we transitioned to sole management by the commission. So at this point, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has the sole management authority for cobia. And yes, as you mentioned, it's definitely a species that presents some real challenges for fishery management. And I think it's all tied back to, or most of it tied back to, you know, the migratory patterns of cobia and sort of how they're moving in space and time along the coast. So cobia move both north-south, and they're also moving sort of inshore and offshore, kind of back and forth. So as they're moving north to south, you know, they're available in different states at different times of year for different amounts of time. You know, sometimes they might be available in one state's waters for just a few weeks, and maybe the next year they're there for, you know, closer to 2 months. So, you know, it's a little bit unpredictable exactly how long they're going to be at certain places along the coast. So this presents a real challenge, as you mentioned, for that recreational data sampling through MRIT. So the majority of this fishery is recreational, so we rely pretty heavily on those MRIT estimates. And, you know, getting those estimates of, you know, how many cobia are harvested each year, it really is dependent on the MRIP sampling intercepting those anglers who have caught cobia, you know, on their fishing trips. And for cobia, if cobia are only available for a few weeks, and then there's maybe not a lot of overlap between when the cobia trips are happening and when the MRIP samplers happen to be there, you get some small sample sizes, and that results in some of the high uncertainty we have with these MRIP estimates. So definitely some real challenges just because of the biology of the species. And then, you know, as folks might be aware, you know, cobia are starting to move, you know, expand their range a little bit, spending a little bit more time further north along the coast. As part of the management board at the commission, we have states like Rhode Island who has joined the management of cobia as cobia start to venture a little bit further north. So definitely a lot of challenges for managers.
Yeah, no, I definitely have noticed over the past couple years more social media anecdotes of, oh my gosh, there's actually a real fishery of cobia, you know, on the South Shore of Long Island and pushing off block. So yeah, it's definitely one of those fisheries from our perspective that's important to weigh in on because it's, you know, exhibiting these somewhat stark and dramatic changes in recent years, and, you know, how we can, you know, advocate for management that, you know, might be better equipped to kind of respond to and sustainably and effectively manage those dynamic responses, I guess, to the marine environment. So, Emily, with that, you know, we kind of touched in on some of the motivating factors for addendum two, but you know, I've been telling people it's really mostly to try to grapple with you know, the recreational data challenges and some of the structural management programs, like, you know, kind of getting around this de minimis state issue, which is kind of the de minimis set aside isn't probably where it should be currently. So, you know, what else is addendum two seeking to solve just from a problem standpoint?
Yeah. So sort of there's two major issues the board kind of brought to the table when they were thinking about this draft addendum. So the first, as you mentioned, is the MRIP data and the high uncertainty. So with these small sample sizes, we have some pretty uncertain MRIP data. And, you know, as you look at MRF data on smaller scales, say at the state level, the uncertainty really increases. So right now, we're using MRF data at the state level for states to develop their management measures. So one thing the board was interested in is exploring, you know, are there other ways we can structure management that could potentially reduce this uncertainty? And so the board was interested in, you know, what if we look at things on a bigger scale? So what if we look at management on a regional scale or even at the coastwide scale? So that sort of those ways to potentially address uncertainty was one of the big drivers of the draft addendum. The other big driver was, you know, what data are we using for allocation? So just sort of a high level overview of how the recreational fishery management works is we have a total recreational quota available to the fishery coastwide. Right now, 1% of that quota is set aside for those northern states that right now just have very low cobia harvest sort of sporadically. And then most of the quota is divided up between Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia. And right now, that quota is divided based on data from 2006 to 2015. So the board was concerned, you know, this data is a little bit outdated. And also, we know that the distribution of cobia landings has changed since 2015. You know, it's been several years, and we've seen harvest increase in the Mid-Atlantic area, particularly in Virginia, the past several years. Harvest has been relatively stable in some of the more southern states, South Carolina and Georgia, but we've also seen it decrease a little bit in North Carolina. So there's been some changes over the past several years. So the board was interested in potentially looking at more recent data to inform this allocation. So those, I think, were the two main drivers for this draft addendum.
Gotcha. And before we dive into some of these different recreational allocation schemes, just a quick question on, because, you know, in the draft addendum, you know, there's a great chart that kind of shows these landings by state. And, you know, this is one of these things with climate change and shifting fisheries, right? It's always hard to parse out what the causes are, you know, whether like cobia are definitely shifting. And you've seen that in, you know, Rhode Island, New York catches, right? But, you know, from my point of view, and this is, again, anecdote, I feel like I have seen an increase in just the effort in, you know, a state like Virginia. So, you know, is there any way to parse out, you know, that effort driven increase in landings rather than, you know, a potential, you know, increase in just actual abundance or, you know, regional availability?
Yeah. So that's, I think, a challenge we have for a lot of our recreational species, you know, is parsing out what are the factors influencing the harvest. So I think it's really difficult to parse that out, but I think Virginia has, you know, indicated there is a lot of effort. There's absolutely a lot of effort, you know, coming from Virginia in recent years, anglers targeting cobia, sight fishing, all of that. So I think that's sort of in combination with cobia expanding their range. So, you know, moving further north and also maybe spending more time in Mid-Atlantic waters than they have in the past. I think it's really a combination, but it is really hard to sort of parse out the different factors there.
Gotcha. So management alternatives. I think it makes sense to probably spend the most time on just the allocation schemes. Because, you know, like you said earlier, currently we manage cobia on a state-by-state allocation scheme where each state has these things called soft harvest targets that, you know, that's the target. That's what, you know, states are told they can catch. But they're soft in the sense where it's not like a, you know, a hard catch limit, more or less. It's harder to enforce and monitor these limits in this fishery, which again is, you know, the allocated proportion is 96% rec, but I think when you look at the actual landings, it's probably higher than that. Is that safe to say?
I haven't looked at the actual sort of percent of landings. You know, some years the commercial fishery is, you know, right at their quota. Some years they're below it. So it's hard to say, but yeah. I mean, the fishery is definitely primarily recreational.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we're looking at you know, a status quo as is normal with any, you know, management action. There's another state by state allocation, which utilizes some new timeframes. And then we have regional and a coastwide allocation scheme, which would, again, you know, kind of take that recreational harvest target and apply it to either two regions or on a coastwide basis. So, you know, Emily, if you could maybe just add a little more color to, you know, I guess the thing I want to focus on here is the trade-offs, right? Like, you know, state by state clearly isn't working. And my impression is that the board probably doesn't want to go that route again, especially considering the MRIP challenges that we know about, and then the ones that might be coming down the pipe here with the Federal Effort Survey reevaluation studies. So, you know, with that, you know, I guess, yeah, what in your mind, you know, being part of, being the staff lead and, you know, being involved in the development of this document, you know, what are some of the trade-offs, you know, if the board chooses to remain state by state or, you know, really looking at, some of these regional or coastwide alternatives?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I would start by saying, you know, I'm not sure the board has, you know, said that the state by state management isn't working. I think they're just trying to determine, you know, we have some challenges with the state by state. So what do the alternatives look like? And as you mentioned, they're trying to weigh these trade-offs of sort of what direction to go. So, right. So starting with that state by state allocation framework where each state has their own target, you know, that's where we are right now. Sort of the next step on the geographic scale would be that regional option. So those options would divide the coast into two regions. So each region would have their own target. And, you know, the objective here is that all states in the region would eventually have the same vessel limit and the same size limit. So right now, most states have the same size limit, but the vessel limit does vary quite a bit among the states. So, you know, the next time a reduction is needed or after the next stock assessment, all those states in a region would have to determine, okay, what is the region-wide vessel limit and size limit that would get us to our target? And then sort of the next step after that on our geographic scale is going coastwide. So all the states from Georgia north would be, you know, managing together toward the coastwide target. There would be one vessel limit, one size limit. One thing to note here is for all of these options, you know, states could still have different seasons, and that's because cobia are available at different times. But, you know, again, the objective is all the states would have the same size and vessel limit for this regional or coastwide option to meet their targets. So I think the primary trade-off here between these different sort of geographic options is you're looking at data uncertainty and management coordination. So, you know, if your primary goal is reducing data uncertainty, you know, the regional and coastwide options, you know, have less uncertainty in their MRIP data as compared to the state by state MRIP data. So, you know, that's sort of the benefit if you're looking at it from a data uncertainty perspective. Sort of the other part of this trade-off is, as I mentioned, the management coordination and, you know, flexibility for the state. So one of the objectives of the COBIA FMP is to provide, you know, some flexibility to the states to sort of meet the needs of their state fishery. So the state-by-state allocation that we have currently provides that flexibility for the states. You know, they still have their target they have to achieve, but they have the flexibility to adjust, you know, things at the state level. Obviously, at the regional or coastwide level, there would be less flexibility, you know, for each state because there would have to be that coordination among multiple states. So I think that sort of data uncertainty and management coordination are sort of the major trade-off that is being considered in this draft addendum.
Yeah. And, you know, from looking at, you know, we spoke about this earlier, right? Like with a regional approach or a coastwide approach, you're increasing that sample size to, you know, get which generally reduces PSEs from the MRIP data. And, you know, like MRIP has always been one of those things where, you know, we know it gets less and less precise and accurate the more zoomed in you go in terms of using that data, right? But on a coastwide level, you know, I know we aren't talking about striped bass today at all, but, you know, like looking at coastwide, it is pretty good at capturing those trends, you know, throughout the whole coast. So, you know, by moving to a regional or coastwide system, you know, you're going to have more useful, reliable and, you know, likely trustworthy, and you trustworthy data, to manage this fishery. And I think, you know, the other on the flip side of that, right, is, you know, again, I'm not a data scientist, but I know there has been, you know, there's some wording in the document, that, you know, some of the, you know, staff and Cobia scientists and managers, when they're looking at changing regulations, right, they look at the time frame of, you know, how long the previous management measures were set into place, right? So by having more states aligned from a regulatory standpoint, that probably increases, you know, our understanding of the fishery, and has to make it easier for, you know, the monitoring side of things to track the recreational quota, right?
Yeah, I think I would just say it's more just a different perspective. So, you know, okay. Right now we're really sort of in this state-by-state perspective where, you know, we have this coast-wide target, but we're really only looking at it in sort of each state's piece. And there's sort of not, you know, not a lot of connection between those pieces right now. And looking at things from a regional or coastwide perspective, it's just a very different way to think about management. And, you know, it's just sort of a big shift in perspective. And so, yes, absolutely. The regional and coastwide would, you know, have more or have less uncertainty in the data. It won't solve the problem. There's always some uncertainty.
Yes.
But there would, of course, be less uncertainty there. I think it's just sort of this question of, these are just very different perspectives to take for management. And so, you know, it's something I think the board members are going to be weighing.
No doubt. They will certainly be weighing this. So further down in addendum two, you know, I think we go into some, you know, more technical alternative sets, like, you know, which years, you know, how do we want to evaluate, you know, the allocation, and how do we want to potentially change allocations with via board action, or you know, there are some potential tools in this document to somewhat address data uncertainty, you know, from a structural standpoint. You know, we also have alternatives about what happens if there are overages, and you know, kind of restructuring the timeline for setting these specifications. So they're kind of intertwined, or no, they are intertwined. So Emily, this can be confusing, I think, but, you know, do you want to kind of briefly touch on those, you know, somewhat more technical, complex, alternative sets quickly here?
Yeah, absolutely. So right. Sort of the bulk of this draft addendum is the allocation schemes that we just talked about. And then we have some remaining options that are, a little bit more process oriented. So, you know, how will updates to allocations in the future work? Or how does the management process work when we're trying to compare, you know, what we've harvested over the last few years against the target? So, you know, these are a little bit more process oriented. So, for example, right now we can look at up to a 3-year average of harvest compared to a target. The draft addendum includes an option that would increase that to a 5-year average. Again, that's sort of under the umbrella of trying to include as much data as possible to, you know, address uncertainty. Related option is, you know, what do we do during the process if a state or a region is over their target? Right now, that state or region has to take a reduction. The draft addendum proposes an option that, you know, if certain criteria are met, so if we're under the coastwide target, and if another state is also under their target, then maybe the state that is over their target wouldn't have to take a reduction. So again, that's sort of related to trying to look at as much data as possible if the board is trying to address uncertainty. That's sort of one of the process considerations. Another consideration is, you know, thinking about for how many years the board can set measures for. So right now, the board can set measures for 3 years at a time. And then after those 3 years, the board comes back, evaluates, you know, how things went, and sets a new set of measures. This draft addendum proposes an option where the board could set the measures for 5 years at a time instead of three. So this is, again, sort of related to data and stock assessments here. So we only get new stock assessment information, you know, every 5 to 6 years for COBIA. So the board is thinking about sort of how to better align the data, incoming data here. And then the final piece is sort of the process for updating allocation in the future. Right now, we can update those allocations by doing an addendum, like this formal process. It takes a little while. But this addendum proposes an option that would let the board, you know, simply take a vote to update the allocations only in very specific scenarios. You know, one of those scenarios is if you have a northern state that starts harvesting more cobia, they need to be factored in. The board can make, could potentially make that change quickly. And if we have any updates to the MRIP data, the board could potentially address that quickly as well. So sort of big picture, those are all sort of tweaks to sort of how the process would work. And then you have sort of those options we already discussed, which is, you know, what does the allocation actually look like?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that was a great kind of overview. And I know, you know, I've been spending a lot of time this week over the past month just trying to, you know, play out these different scenarios, like, you know, what's happening now, you know, what management might look like in the future. I think for our listeners, right, like there are in other species, there has been, you know, when looking at extending timeframes to better capture, you know, what the, not the trend, but to smooth out potential, like, you know, crazy MRIP estimates, like that is one of the, you know, tools managers have to, you know, track recreational catch and effort, et cetera. On the flip side, right, like data uncertainty can go both ways. Like it can, the error bars can go high or they can go low. And, you know, in terms of smoothing that out and going to, you know, a 5-year process, right, you know, notwithstanding, you know, a stock assessment that potentially falls in the middle of that 5-year spec cycle, you know, at what point, I guess, does that potentially slow down management response to, you know, a species that is relatively vulnerable to fishing pressure, right? They spend a lot of time up in the water column. They can be, you know, pretty effective, and anglers can be pretty efficient in targeting them. And, you know, we don't know a ton about cobia compared to other species, right? So, you know, how does kind of the health of the stock, you know, fold in, and the sustainability of the stock fold into, you know, let's say a 5-year spec cycle versus what we have now with a 3 and, you know, kind of a stock assessment trigger added onto the 3-year?
Yeah. So I think one thing to keep in mind is, you know, even for our current 3-year cycle or this option for a 5-year cycle, those 3 and 5 year marks are, think about them as sort of the maximum the board can set. So the board can always, if they, you know, see that a new stock assessment is coming or some new information, they could choose to, you know, only set specs for 1 year or 2 years before coming back to them. So the board does have that ability to sort of decide exactly how many years they want to set based on what information they know is coming. And I think, you know, the other thing is these stock assessments are, you know, really critical to this process. And, you know, the specs, you know, the measures the board can set are sort of tied to the stock assessment. Even if the board set the measures for 5 years, the board has the ability to sort of come back to those in the middle if they get that new information. You know, and I, one of the reasons that the management of COBIA was sort of switched from the council to the commission is the commission does have a little bit more flexibility to respond more quickly to stock assessments, and sort of being able to look at specs as often as every year if they wanted to, just having that ability to look at things more quickly. So I think the board is, you know, very aware of the importance of these stock assessments, and there actually is a stock assessment ongoing right now. And so an interesting sort of timeline perspective here is this draft addendum will potentially change the allocations and the state targets for the next few years. However, sort of in a year or two, we're also going to get a stock assessment that might change, you know, what's the total recreational quota that is available. So there's a couple of potential changes coming for COBIA, and I think it, you know, it's a lot to think about for sure.
Yeah, I remember that kind of being a point of discussion, I guess, at the May commission meeting, right? Where, you know, there were some comments like, should we just scrap all this and wait for the assessment? And, you know, I think from our perspective, right, is much of this document is seeking to improve the underlying management, right? We're not addressing measures or doing anything yet. So, you know, you can change the process, and then, you know, you're cognizant that, you know, there might be changes with the future stock assessment, but you have the better foundation, or, you know, more effective foundation in place to then take that stock assessment information and respond, right? So that's been our you know, point of view in following this throughout its development. It was also, you know, one of the motivations to kind of do this action quickly, right, is because specs are upcoming anyways, or the current specs are expiring. So, you know, states, you know, or COBIA board members wanted to get something new on the table to, you know, work with for this next cycle.
Right. So right now, the state measures were set, you know, as status quo for this year, 2024. And the board now needs to revisit what those measures will be for 2025. So assuming the board, you know, implements this addendum for the 2025 season, this addendum, again, would impact, you know, what will those allocations and targets be for 2025? And yes, as you mentioned, some board members, you know, noted that it's important to address this management framework, you know, as soon as possible. But I think there were also some board members who, you know, thinking about the upcoming stock assessment and, you know, potential future changes to MRIP are concerned that there could be a lot of management changes. So if management measures change in 2025 because of this addendum, then the management measures might change again in 2026 or 27. So I think there's perspective sort of on both sides and sort of how quickly board members might want to implement these changes. So I think we'll see sort of what the board decides as far as timeline in August.
Yep. So I do want to, you know, wrap up here quickly. And the final, we'll talk about timelines shortly, but, you know, in this whole conversation, I realized I neglected to, you know, ask you about just the general status and trends of COBIA in recent years. You know, I know we've got an assessment upcoming. The previous assessment was what, 18?
It 2018? Was completed in, I believe, 2020, with data through 2017. We are, you know, looking forward to this next assessment to add a good amount of data.
Gotcha.
So yeah,
we'll be paying attention to that. And then, Emily, I guess in closing, you know, if you have anything else you'd like to add, or, you know, how our listeners who might want to provide input, how they can get involved. You know, I know next week they're We have two virtual public hearings, which, you know, we will be getting some of our people out to. But yeah, what's the timeline for public comment and then just this document moving forward?
Yeah, so, you know, we are trying to gather as much public comments as possible, and public comment is open through July 8th. And you can submit comments by sending us an email at comments@asmfc.org. And then all of the information is posted on the commission website under our public input page. And we also have a recording, you know, providing an overview presentation on our YouTube channel. So that's also available as well. So once we get in all those public comments, you know, I'll be the one reading through every single comment. And in August, the board will review the public comment and, you know, potentially select which options to move forward with. So that will, you know, set what the allocation and process will look like. And then after that August meeting is when the states will say, okay, you know, here's our new target. What does that mean for our 2025 measure? So there's a lot sort of coming down the line later this year. But absolutely, you know, we really encourage folks to submit public comment. And as you mentioned, we do have two more public hearings, Monday, June 24th and Tuesday, June 25th, 6 p.m. online on webinar. So all that information is on our website.
Awesome. And we can tie in some of those links in the podcast notes, et cetera. But Emily, I just wanted to thank you for taking a minute on this scorching Friday morning. And, you know, I think this was really helpful for listeners, you know, whether or not they fish for cobia. I think it's an interesting topic. And again, like I mentioned earlier, it's one of those fisheries that's exhibiting a ton of change, frustrating management. So, you know, anytime, you know, management is trying to, you know, better grapple with one of with those factors, you know, I think it's important for anglers from all over the country, right, to, you know, learn more about and, you know, try to understand. So with that, I thank you again, and I hope you have a great weekend. And thanks for stopping by the Guidepost.
Yeah, thanks for having me.